The following panel was featured at the 18th Annual National Jewish Retreat in Miami, Florida, a project of the Rohr Jewish Learning Institute. We hope you enjoy it. We encourage you to visit jretreat.com for information on upcoming retreats. When our world falls apart, addressing anti-Semitism in the modern world, a panel discussion with Dr. Jonathan B. Singer, Dr. Recheli Baratz-Ricks, Rabbi Ephraim Goldberg, and Rabbi Yitzchak Shachet, moderated by Mrs. Miriam Lipsker.
We have the privilege of hearing from our illustrious panel. I'll just share one moment of introduction myself. My husband and I have been blessed to serve as Chabad emissaries, shluchim, to Emory University in Atlanta, Georgia, it's going to be coming up 25 years. We like to say that Emory stands for Established Methodist, only recently Yiddish. A lot of members of the tribe that go to this wonderful school. We moved there. I know people are like trying to do the math, like 25 years, you're there. When did you get there? 3 months after our wedding, my husband and I moved to establish the Jewish Center there. We started out, it was just the two of us, and now, thank God, we have a full-time staff of eight who, incidentally, I gave birth to all the staff members. And I'm sharing with you a scene that took place on our campus 3 months ago, or 4 months ago. It was the beginning of May, and we had an event. The place was packed with students, undergrads and grad students, and we were all gathering. We had a barbecue, and we were hearing from two Israeli reservists who had just gotten out of 3 months in Gaza, as well as we had the Consul General of Israel for the state for the Southeast, Anat Sultan Dadon, who was there to address the students. It was a full event. There was a barbecue, Israeli music, and then there was going to be a Q&A afterwards. That was what was going on inside our Chabad house. Outside the front gates, which we're grateful we have those front gates, somebody had sent the flyer, which was only sent to our kind of inner signed up students. Someone had posted it on a Muslim pro-terrorist student chat, and gathered outside the gate were dozens and dozens of dozens of riffraff, all ages, looked like they were pulled out of all sorts of, I'm saying dumpsters, because some of them did not look like they even showered. It was a scary sight of ragtag people. Some were students, most were not, yelling and screaming. There ended up being arrests because there was some violence that took place with people tearing, ripping flags. We obviously had security. We had our security guard with his dog and his machine gun, as well as local and university security there. But that was the scene. And I actually have a 20-second clip of what was going on inside. Jewish students gathering, eating, of course, Jewish music playing, and having a conversation to educate and to learn. And a few feet from this front door, the scene, myself, my children, my husband had never heard the language and the words and the things that were being hurled at us. And this took place Atlanta, Georgia, in May. So my question as I'm opening up this panel is, what is going on? What happened? What is happening? And that's really what we're gathering to address today. What's going on? What's the origin of this problem? And what are some solutions and practical resolutions and ideas that we can address this? So I'm going to start out by having each member of our panel just say your name and your formal title. So this is a 30-second, your name. And when I say by formal title, you know what your day job is. So you could leave the hobbies, you want to throw one in, that's fine. But just a formal self-introduction so everyone knows the different perspectives that we have gathered here, what you're coming to represent. So I'll start all the way here to my left. Go.
Pass the mic, sorry.
Oh, we're sharing.
So thank you for everybody for coming. My name is Dr. Recheli Baratz. I'm the head of the Department for Combating Antisemitism and Enhancing Resilience in the World Zionist Organization.
Good afternoon. I'm Rabbi Yitzchak Shachet of the Mill Hill Synagogue in London, England, also author, broadcaster, and great to be here.
Hi, Ephraim Goldberg. I'm the rabbi of Boca Raton Synagogue in Boca Raton, Florida. And I'm Jonathan Singer. I'm a professor of social work at Loyola University Chicago.
Okay, so welcome. Thank you all for being here. And none of this was rehearsed or prepared, but I figured it's not such a fun topic, but we're going to make it a little more fun by doing a lightning round that no one's prepared for. Just see, you know, if you guys are up to the pay grade, you know. So the lightning round question that I'm going to give you each 40 seconds to answer is, from your perspective, what do you think the origin or root of anti-Semitism is? Like, where is this from? We're going to start here this time.
Okay. All right. So a root cause for anti-Semitism, structural inequity. So what I see is that we have people who are able to, through the invisible guise of structure, target groups of people because of this perceived evil, right? Because they are Jews, this perceived power, because they are Jews, and they're able to enact this because of what are predominantly invisible structures that we have in our society. And so that is the way that anti-Semitism gets enacted. And so that's my 40 seconds.
I don't think we could reduce anti-Semitism to one cause. It's the world's oldest hatred, but it has expressed itself, exhibited itself in different circumstances, in different parts of the world, and in different environments, and for different reasons. They hate us when we're rich, they hate us when we're poor, they hate us when we live among them, they hate us when we live apart, and so there isn't a common denominator that could explain that phenomenon across the board. Much of anti-Semitism, or part of it, is not even about the world, but is about us, our role, our responsibility, the difference we're meant to make, and what that brings out from others in the world.
To suggest there's a root cause to anti-Semitism means that if you can get to the roots, you can eradicate it. But you can't, because anti-Semitism is fundamentally an irrational hatred. It's been around since the beginning of time. Our rabbis declared it as an established fact that Esau will always hate Jacob. Jonathan Sacks famously described it as a virus. A virus mutates, anti-Semitism mutates. Once upon a time, it was overt hatred of the Jew. Today, hating Jews is not politically correct, so hating Israel is the politically correct way to hate Jews. But ultimately, it was, it is, and it always will be until Mashiach comes.
In two words, the stars. In 30 seconds, I will take a little bit far from the Esav. I will start. The author said that in the 3rd to the 5th century before BC, in the Alexander the Greatest gave the Jewish free life. There was a freedom of religion. And then he gave them the sabbatical year. He gave them, they didn't have to pay taxes. And everybody saw they so succeed and they love what they do. And then they didn't understand why they not believe in the stars. So I think then they didn't sacrifice and they didn't want to sacrifice the animals. And then they start hating them. So I think this is the point I want to point at.
So I have an individual question for each of you. I'm going to start with Dr. Racheli Baratz, because you are head of the Department for Combating Antisemitism, and I love the end of your organization, and Enhancing Resilience. Can you describe for us the situation that you're seeing and what's going on from your perspective running this organization?
Wow. So since October 7, everything changed. If I give you a little bit the numbers, so here in the United States of America, it's 3.6 more incidents in the past 10 months comparing to 10 months before. In Canada, it's almost 7 times more. In France, yesterday, somebody took the train, and then somebody yelled at him and spit on him and said, Hitler should have killed all of you. I don't know how many of you know that right now, in Ireland, Rabbi Abraham is in jail because he made circumstances to a new baby born. He appealed to the Supreme Court in Ireland because he didn't get any kosher food. So the court said, you're right, you deserve kosher food, but you will stay in jail because of what you did. So this is just an example from the past past week. Every day, we're getting more than 100 incidents in my office every day, comparing to like 50 per week before October 7. In the website all over, like there is dozens of hate speech every day, everywhere. So I think this is the reality right now. And if I will summarize everything, it's like right now, 2024, I'm not a prophet, but I can calculate and said, we're saying that it probably will be 4 times more comparing to 2023. But 2023 was more than double than 2022. And 2022 was 400% more than the decade before. So if we will compare 2024 for the last 20 years, I think we're in a different world today.
Thank you. Rabbi Goldberg, as a vocal and prolific pulpit rabbi, what can you tell us, being the rabbi of a very large Orthodox congregation, from a religious perspective, how would you define what we're seeing and what are you seeing?
I think it goes back to the original question of the root cause, and we could and should focus on our enemies, our antagonists, the people who seek our demise and who are marching towards it. That's important. We have organizations and we have efforts and campaigns, and everyone should sign up and everyone should participate. But we shouldn't only live down here as Jews. We don't just live with statistics and data. They're frightening, and thank you for sharing them. But as Jews, we've always been challenged to try to live up here simultaneously. There's a physical world and a metaphysical world. There's the reality, but there's the reality of God in this world and the message he's given us and a religious context to what we're going through and to what is happening. And I think it's critically important for us to experience and to try to process all of this through that prism and through that lens. And what I mean by that is the following. The world is increasingly hating us for being a Jew. On the one hand, that's horrific and we have to stop it, but on the other, there is a blessing in it. In fact, there's a commentary on the Haggadah. Passover night, one of the paragraphs that's most popular, beautiful tunes have been written to it. V'hi she'amda lav aseinu v'lanu, shelo achad b'levad aleinu, amar aleinu l'chal aseinu. That in every generation they rise in order to take us out. V'hi, this, the thing, stood for us the test of time. What's the v'hi? What stood the test of time? And there are many answers to that question, and the time in Av is not now to discuss it. But one interpretation, the Aruch HaShulchan in his Haggadah says, V'hi, you know what has kept us going, and you know what has kept us alive? She'b'chol dor v'dor omdim aleinu l'chal oseinu. When Jews forget their Jews, when Jews assimilate and blend in, when Jews are embarrassed or ashamed, or hesitate or pause to display or practice their Judaism, we disappear. We run the risk of disappearing. And make no mistakes, the statistics we just heard, as horrifying as they are, pale in comparison to what we're doing to ourselves through assimilation and intermarriage. We are decimating and we are disappearing at a much faster clip than our anti-Semitic enemies could ever dream of doing. And so while we have to work and fight and stop anti-Semitism, the silver lining of it is a wake-up call. And my experience and the experience of my members is to engage Jews who have been disconnected from the Judaism for so long, who since October 7th and since the rise of anti-Semitism are feeling Jewish once again, are curious Jewishly once again. A couple months ago, I was at a doctor's office. The nurse, you know, people, the expression is they beg you, they want you to know they're Jewish. Their soul is crying out, it's screaming out. And are we listening? Will we respond or are we going to ignore? So she just used the word totally incorrectly, inappropriately. She mentioned something being bashert. It was not bashert. It had nothing to do with it. She just used the word bashert because she wanted me to know she was Jewish. And as I was walking out of that building, there was a man in the elevator with me. It was 11 o'clock on a Friday morning. And he said to me, you're probably in a rush so you can get home by sundown. I was like, yeah, that's I'm heading right now. His soul was crying out, I'm a Jew, I'm a Yid, I have a spark, I have a soul. Because I think as we're experiencing and engaging, as we're living with the angst and the anxiety and the fear, the Jewish soul is waking up and we need to nourish, we need to respond, and we need to be there. But I'll end by saying it's not only true in being responsive to the awakening that's happening in the Jewish people, to take advantage and, so to say, even leverage anti-Semitism, to say if the world hates you so much for being a Jew, why is it important you're Jewish? What does it mean to be a Jew? What are you learning and studying? How are you practicing being a Jew? But anti-Semites want us to hide our Judaism. For the first time, I have congregants and members who are considering when they travel, thank God it hasn't happened and won't yet, in Boca Raton, or really Florida in our experience, or a part of Florida. But when they travel elsewhere, we all know what happened on Saturday night in Crown Heights. A young student who came just to study at 770, stabbed by someone who said, "Free Palestine, do you want to die?" Are we going to get to the point that we can't walk the streets of New York? They want us to take our yarmulke off. They want us to hide our Jewish symbols. They want us to be shy and ashamed of our Jewish practice. And I think the biggest fight and the biggest battle and what we can do in response is be more proud and practice more and stand up and don't cower, don't be ashamed, don't be afraid, because religiously, as we fight anti-Semitism, we know how the story ends, we know who's on our side, and we know what God is waiting for us to do.
Professor Singer, as a social worker and a professor who deals with mental health on a college campus in Chicago, from your perspective, what is the conversation around anti-Semitism in this academic environment and dealing with students and their mental health issues? How do you see it? How does it show up? And how are you dealing with what you're seeing?
So in academia, academia is very broad, but what I've experienced is the community of Jewish and Israeli social work professors. And there has been a robust conversation within that community talking about how to address anti-Semitism, anti-Zionism, how to address issues of progressive politics, how to address issues of conservatism, in part because the role of the social worker is to start where the client is. So when a social worker is out there in the community working with someone, it doesn't matter what the social worker thinks or believes. It matters what's important for the client. And when you have an educational system that is set up to ensure that you are truly there for somebody else, you have to start out with knowing who you are. Otherwise, things are going to come up and you're going to get triggered and you're going to get prompted in ways that are surprising, and it's going to keep you from being able to provide the services that you need to others. So how does that tie in with anti-Semitism? In universities across the United States, famously Columbia, UCLA, some other schools, there have been mass protests among social work students walking out for pro-Palestine rallies that have, teachers have said you should go and you can skip class, it's totally fine, you don't need to be here for this class because you are engaging in social justice actions. So the debate in the sort of the world of social work academics is this social justice, right? Is this consistent with social work code of ethics? And perhaps most foundationally, how does this tie in with how we understand structural inequities and discrimination writ large? Most of the clients that we work with are not Jewish, even if we're in Jewish services. I used to work for Jewish Family Services in Austin, Texas. Most of my clients weren't Jewish, right? So within the general public, how do we think about this? And one of the big divisions is, what is the role of diversity, equity, and inclusion programming and anti-Semitism? And there are some professors that, Jewish and Israeli professors, that's specifically what I'm talking about in social work, that say DEI is the problem. DEI is the problem. There is no place for addressing this within that framework. And other social work professors say, actually, DEI is where we need to start because of the way that DEI is structured and because of the way that DEI works within social work writ large. So those are some of the conversations that we're having in social work. And what I will say just briefly about students, the students that I've had throughout the years, and honestly, anytime I go out and I give a talk, I always use examples about being Jewish and about what it means for Jewish kids. I specifically work around youth suicide. And I'm always giving examples related to Judaism and the experience of Jewish folks. And I'm always getting people coming up to me saying, Thank you for talking about this. I've never actually been to a talk on youth suicide or mental health or whatever, where people have talked about the experience of Jewish kids or Jewish families. It's just not talked about. And so I think that that's one of the things that I see students coming to me and saying is that they feel like they can come to me as a safe person or a brave person or as an accountable person, whatever you want to say, so that they can share their experience because I model that for them in the classroom. And I don't want to be the only person in my school that can do that, but I think it's an important thing for all of our kids when they're going off to college, when they're in the workplace, to know that they have people that they can talk to about either the individual discrimination that they experience that we might think of as sort of individual anti-Semitism, or the structural and societal experience that you are being discriminated against indirectly because of your identification as a Jew.
Thank you. So Rabbi Shachat, this question is for you. I think I can just speak for myself. Until pretty recently, I didn't think anti-Semitism was something super relevant to me because I didn't experience it firsthand. And when people would say, you know, tell stories, it was here, it was there, it was in France, it was in Ireland, like in Europe, somewhere else, but like America is America. And not that we don't have any problems, but it's not our big problem. I'm talking not recently. and coming or representing, I'm not saying you're representing Europe, but do you think that what you've seen and experienced in Europe is different or the same as what we are seeing a huge uptick and rise in here? Do you think there's differences? Do you think that what's happened, you know, far away from our perspective was really here all along? How would you view this? You know, is there a distinction and how would you view it?
I'm glad you asked the question, if only because since I got here on Monday afternoon, I must have been asked at least a dozen times from some of you, oy, how are things in Britain? Things in Britain are not a whole lot worse than things are here in the United States, or that things are as they are going on currently in my hometown of Toronto, Canada, or wherever else besides. Now, to be sure, there's probably something of a distinction between Britain and certain specific other parts of Europe. But let me say this. What has become perfectly obvious, especially since October the 7th, is that we've come to realize that those who hate us a lot more than we ever knew. That said, and this must be said as well, I was walking in the streets of London from a medical appointment some 3 weeks after October the 7th, and a big burly fellow with tattoos down both arms carrying a cup of coffee in each hand, excuse me. And I thought, okay, here we go. And he says, it's terrible what's going on out there, isn't it? And I said, yes, it is. To which he then added, I'm really sorry about all that. And I looked to him and I said to him, thank you, I really appreciate you saying that. And it occurred to me that actually those who love us a lot more than we realize as well. The only problem is that they are very much, they are, I maintain they're the majority, but they are this silent majority, that they don't speak up and only they're there on the sidelines just lamenting and feeling sorry for us in the process. Do things go on? And I'm going to speak uniquely for Britain for the moment. Of course things go on. Although right now, if you're watching a lot of social media, everyone's confused because there's a whole face-off between the far right and the Muslim left. And they're just knocking each other out. We Jews make a mistake if we assume that's going to take care of our Muslim problem for us, because my enemy's enemy is my friend is a fundamental error, always was, always will be. We are literally between a rock and a hard place. That is between the far right and the fundamentalist Islamic left, to call it for what it is. Progressive, okay. But the bottom line remains that I personally, living in Mill Hill, don't typically encounter anti-Semitism in any way, shape, or form, and that's in Northwest London. Incidents do occur, just as they occurred in Crown Heights on Saturday night. There are opportunists who grab hold of the wider mood out there and seize it as an opportunity and as an excuse, and that is what is becoming the increasing concern. But as has been said, we can't allow for ourselves to become identified by that. I continuously encourage Jews that I encounter or from my pulpit, don't allow for yourself to be defined by anti-Semitism. Does it bring out some of the essence of the Jew? It certainly does. Because actually, for the first time in all my years in Mill Hill, I knew of a first-hand anti-Semitic encounter this past Sunday when my son decided to take a small table, set it up on the Mill Hill Broadway outside a bunch of stores in the afternoon when there's a large population of people with a pair of tefillin, stopping people one by one by one, etc. One family walked by. Would you like to put on tefillin? No, thank you. He walks on. Three, let's say, Middle Eastern-looking fellows suddenly stopped my son as he was getting ready to leave and engaged him in conversation. Why are you here? What do you represent? Do you believe in Israel? Do you think Palestine should be free? And he said, I'm not interested in having this conversation with you. And they pushed, and he pushed back, and finally two of them called the third guy away, swore at him, and moved on. But then that family that walked away turned around, came back, and the guy said, I saw what just happened. I'd like to put on tefillin with you. So there is some kind of upside. I'm not looking, I want to stress this, I'm not looking in any way, shape, or form to justify God allowing for anti-Semitism to manifest and continuously exist as it has been throughout. By no means whatsoever. It's his problem as much as ours if we are his children. And he has to put a stop to it and help us put a stop to it. Nevertheless, there are pockets of upside. It does trigger the pentaliad, that Jewish spark that lingers at the core of every single one of us. October the 7th has taken so many Jews out of the woodwork and enabled them to re-engage and re-identify. So don't allow anti-Semitism, as real as it is and as problematic as it has become, to actually define you and become what you are all about as a Jew. Just stand tall and proud in who you are, because we're always going to be limited, always going to be very limited in being able to defeat the enemy. The only thing we can do is enhance our own identity and stand tall and proud as fellow Jews.
Okay, so that actually leads right into our final round of questions, which I'm going to ask. We only have 10 minutes, so I'm going to ask the same question to kind of close out to each one of the panelists. What would be, from your perspective and your vantage point, the most helpful, productive, positive solution to what you're seeing? Or what is it that we can do except for lament and calculate and report and oi and sigh and what's going on, which we do that? What can we do about it? And what can our response be that would be positive, productive, and helpful from your perspective? So we'll start with Professor Singer and we'll work our way down.
So there are a couple things. One, when we're talking—
You only have 2 minutes. All y'all, as we say in the South.
I lived in Austin, Texas for 11 years, so. So in terms of social work education, and I think education, especially for professional studies in general, I think it's really important for us to explicitly address anti-Semitism as a topic. This is something that hasn't been addressed explicitly in social work, and from my conversations with folks in law and business, it hasn't been explicitly addressed. And I think one of the reasons why it's important to address is because, obviously, of everything that people have said here today, but also because if we're going out there as social workers and we're providing services, understanding the ways in which anti-Semitism is one of the forces that keeps people from fully experiencing sort of their place in society, being able to access what they need, being able to get the support that they need when they need it, not just from other Jews, but from society in general, then we're gonna continue to foster a society that says that some people cannot participate equally, cannot have access to all the resources. I think that message is very well established in social work for racialized minorities, for other religious groups, but not around Jews and anti-Semitism. So that's what I think explicitly needs to happen. And I will say that there's a grand challenge for social work. There are 13 grand challenges. I'm the author of the one on harnessing technology for social good. There is a proposal out there for addressing anti-Semitism to be a 14th grand challenge. So there is stuff that's in the works right now.
Something radical has to change in our approach rather than continue to pursue the same methods that have brought us these results. There are ways and there are silver linings and there are friends. That it was so well said, and thank you, Rabbi, that our friends love us more than we ever knew. And there are so many friends. The polls show the majority of Americans, over a certain age at least, very much stand with the Jewish people and with Israel. And even though we have certainly concerns politically, maybe with one side of the aisle more than the other, but on the whole, Congress and on the whole, the current administration, whoever will be the next, we hope will also stand and fight. But there are differences that we can make. This week, we were not successful. AIPAC did not take on Ilhan Omar, and because they knew they wouldn't be successful. But we have enormous success in having eliminated Jamal Bowman and Cori Bush from Congress, two members of the squad who specifically were advancing anti-Semitic, anti-Israel, that didn't happen because we were indifferent or complacent or apathetic. It didn't happen because we were hopeless or gave up. It happened because people contributed, people stepped up, people stood up, and they worked on it, and there's much more work to be done there. But ultimately, while we're doing all that work in the physical world, I come back to the metaphysical world. What can we do, every one of us in this room, to take it more seriously ourselves? Lean into your Judaism. Be prouder, be more practicing. Show God that we're in pain, that his name, his brand is being diminished and hurt and under attack in this world. Be a better brand ambassador for God, the Jewish people, and Torah living, to show we're not ashamed, we're not afraid, and we're going to stand up. And that silent majority can turn to become a vocal majority who stand by our side and celebrate our contribution to the world and come to our defense. But they have to see us believe in ourselves. They have to see us pray to the Almighty and ask him each and every day to recognize metaphysically his role in our security and well-being. And I think doing more Torah and mitzvot, being more proud and more practicing and encouraging and enriching others to do, is something every single one of us can take responsibility for.
To pick up on those very points of my illustrious colleague, to be sure, yes, where we can, we must definitely call it out. Where we are captains of industry or in any which other way that we can actually exert influence to stamp out anti-Semitism, that must be exercised in every real way. Look how we got rid of all those yentas who are heads of the various different university campuses. Even the president of Columbia yesterday had to finally step down. Well, I'm glad you're clapping. Now she's coming back to the UK, so it becomes our problem again. But be that as it may, for me, it all comes down to one of my favorite anecdotes. And I heard this firsthand from somebody called Charles. He doesn't ever want me to mention his last name in the context of this. But he does some, or did some broadcasting at the BBC, as did I. And that's where he told me the story. And how he had years ago always pulled up from Shoal to the car park in the studios. And he would take his yarmulke off his head, put it in his glove compartment, go upstairs. And one day he met Trevor MacDonald, who, for context, is a black anchorman, now today Sir Trevor MacDonald, already retired, but at the time very, very well known, very prominent, and this is a good many years ago. They met, of all places, in the men's room. And Trevor MacDonald said to him, "I know you, you're Charles from upstairs." "Yes." He says, "I see you sometimes when you pull up, you're wearing your yarmulke, and then you take it off. Can I ask you why?" And he says, "Come on, man, this is the BBC. I don't want to stand out, I don't want to look different, I just like to keep a low profile." And Trevor looked to him, and he said to him, again, bearing in mind this is many, many years ago, he said, "Do you know that I am the only black person working in this building, apart from the cleaner?" He says, "How do you think that makes me feel?" And he says, "When I walk into the boardroom, I immediately sense my difference." And then he looked at Charles, and he pinched the skin on his cheek, and he said, "You see this? This is who I am. It doesn't wash off." That's the message that we individually, even if maybe we don't have the influence to stamp it out there, should take on board in regard to our own selves. Who we are doesn't wash off. The non-Jews see it, they identify it, so there's no point hiding it, which will make them all the more suspicious. Stand tall, stand proud. Yes, there's a lot of rhetoric out there. Yes, there's a lot of noise out there. Social media doesn't help, and we keep coming back to look at it some more, to switch off if you can, because that's also a good idea. But just remember, I'm Yisrael Chai. We have, are, and will always continue to live on.
Wow, I'm the last one. So I promise in the end there will be good news. As a major, it's easy for me to give commands in 2 minutes, but not a comment in 2 minutes. So a little bit. My department dealing with monitoring anti-Semitism all over the world. So, of course, I know what is going on in Ireland, in France, in Germany. Yes, there is difference between the anti-Semitism in Great Britain to Germany, to France. It's based on other roots. We can see it. Of course, it's a little different than what is going on here in the States. But I promise you good news. The other part of my job description is enhancing resilience. And I do believe that enhancing Jewish identity to the student in the campus is one of the most important things that we did since October 7. After October 7, I decided, as the head of the department, that we need to change something. We're not just talking about anti-Semitism. We're trying to understand what we need to change and not do more of the same. That's why we decided with the JLI to create a program here in the States, in the campuses. We finished 22 universities here in the States since October 7. There are 22 new groups because of our joint program. And one day, Rabbi Mintz, that I owe him a lot of thank you, he told me that there is a lot of SJP students in my program. I said, what? Do I pay for the SJP student to be in my program? The JVP students? And he said, yes. And they are coming to our classes. And then get Jewish identity. And they understand what is Jewish identity and what is the roots of our identity. And this is how we change their life. And they to change their opinion. And to bring some new ideas to the table. And to speak what hurts to us. And then, during those conversations in the university, in the campus, we're making the echo. And this echo made the change. And this is the only way we can change to create the Jewish identity, the community resilience, not just how to deal with fires or with earthquake, how to deal with anti-Semitism here in the campuses. And I promise another good idea, another good hope. I hope that, where is Rabbi Zalman, that with the Wellness Institute of the JLI, on January, we will publish new guidelines for teachers from elementary school to high school and to the university about bullying. For the teacher, how to identify there is bullying because of anti-Semitism, and how to deal with it, and how to identify it. And this is the only way that we will create the change. Because of our identity, our Jewish identity, that's the way we will win.
So, thank you all. I'm going to conclude with an anecdote that occurred a couple months ago. I know there's a bunch of Sinai scholars here. Can you make some noise, Sinai scholars? So, our last class of Sinai scholars, we always do an open Q&A for any question that didn't come up or wasn't addressed over the 8 courses, an open question, open mic. And this occurred a couple months ago. One of the students asked me, she said she was, you know, very, very brilliant student, but without a strong Jewish education coming into college. And she said to me, of all the things that we've discussed the Torah's perspective on, what is the one thing that the Torah repeats over and over again? Like the most often repeated thing in the Torah? And I said, I don't really know the answer numbers-wise. You know, I never did the math. I don't know. The actual statement, which I discovered and I didn't know before her question, that is repeated the most times in the entire Torah are the words, and it's repeated over 100 times, the words Al Tira. Don't be afraid. Don't be afraid, and don't be afraid, and do not fear, and don't be scared. That is the phrase repeated most often in the Torah. And so in concluding a discussion on the horrible things that we see, the frightening things around us, and what can we do, and how could we respond, and what should be the best, you know, form of resistance and education and pride and knowledge, I think listening to what the Torah says most often, which is Al Tira, not to be afraid, it means it's acknowledging there's a fear and it's acknowledging there's cause, there's a reason, but it's essentially saying don't succumb to that fear, and living with pride and with joy is not something that we could do if fear is getting the better of us.
please visit myjli.com to learn more about JLI's multiple educational offerings.